Hey everyone, I'm so excited for tonight's show, so thanks everyone for listening. But first, I know I talk a lot about sex toys on the show, and you all email me which one should I get, and it can be overwhelming. And if you go to a store, there's so much to choose from. Or maybe, like me, you want to try everything. Luckily, there's a new home delivery service that wraps the sex shop in a package and sends it straight to your door. Spicy Subscriptions is a monthly delivery box uniquely themed to help you improve your sex life, complete with the latest sex accessories like vibrators, lube, and massage oils that are picked up by relationship and sex experts. Plus, you get to try one new box each month. It's a perfect way to add an extra spark to the bedroom. In fact, 80% of their subscribers have noticed an improvement in their sex life. Imagine every month you and your partner can look forward to the box with anticipation, or even if you're single, these boxes will spice up your solo time. Our sex lives are constantly changing in our 20s, 30s, 40s, and you have to adapt and find out what works over the years. So whether you're single or in a relationship, who wouldn't love a fun and flirty surprise that shows up every month? If you're looking for a way to spice up your already fabulous sex life and love a little variety, Spicy Subscriptions is definitely worth checking out. To get started, go to spicysubscriptions.com, use coupon code Emily to receive a free deluxe toy and 5% off your order. Or if you get a 4 to 8 month subscription, you'll get a free deluxe toy and your first spice box for free. That's at spicysubscriptions.com. Use coupon code Emily.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily. You got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. It feels so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com, where you can check out all of our podcasts, sign up for our mailing list, which you absolutely should, because I have to say, not to toot my own horn, people actually love the emails I send. They read them. You know, you get a lot of emails, you're like, spam, don't want it. I'm sending you useful information and tips, so sign up on my website, and you'll also get a report, the 5 biggest mistakes you're making in bed if you're a man or a woman. And you can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Sex with Emily. And I am so excited about tonight's show. My guest, as you know, I've had a lot of different types of guests on the show. I've had sex therapists and lots of porn stars lately, phone sex operators, dating experts, relationship experts, and just some regular people too. In fact, the show we just posted, which you have to listen to, was my intern sex toy review day show, which we're bringing back from a few years ago. It's always been a popular topic. My assistant and intern, we talked all about the G-spot and the right sex toys to use. But tonight, my guest is Deanna Jordan. She's a relationship and addiction expert for over 20 years and specializes in the maintenance of healthy relationships, how to build and maintain healthy relationships, because you know we all want that. I know you email me about it every day, through tough times. But also will help us identify those emotional vampires. You know, those people in our lives who suck the life out of us. And how to get rid of them from our lives in a safe and healthy way. This can be a lover, someone you work with, or family. Who doesn't have someone who's sucking the energy out of you, right? We're going to talk about how to deal with that. An addiction, whether it's to love or sex or drugs or alcohol, affects almost everyone. Whether it's your partner, a coworker, family, friend, I mean, everyone's got someone in their life, but how do you deal with it? Can you maintain a good relationship with someone who's struggling with addiction or in recovery? From my experience, I used to date a series of stereotypical Irish Catholic alcoholics. They were fun, you know.
It sounds like fun.
Right, they were so fun. I love them. Like a serial Irish Catholic alcoholic thing. Life of the party, they were romantic, you know, but eventually I realized that, you know, alcohol was their true love.
Yeah,
there's nothing I could do about it.
The thing about substance abusers is they're so charming.
I know. I loved them. I was like, it's okay. And then it's hard to face it. And you make excuses that it's temporary. And so my last guy, you'll get this. He was literally from Ireland, like off the boat. And I thought, he can't help it. He drinks a lot of Turkish culture. I mean, I'm
genetics.
Jewish. I'm neurotic. Like, what's the difference? You know, but I, you know, have moved past that. And so tonight's show will help everyone. Whether you're dealing with an addiction, we'll talk about Deanna's rules for healthy relationships across the board. Okay, plus, she thinks we should all wait 90 days before having sex with a new partner. And yep. I'm almost convinced after reading what she thinks why we should. All this and more on tonight's show. And we're going to get to Deanna in a minute. And Deanna, you're welcome to chime in. But someone just dropped in. It happens to be my brother, Michael Morse, who's in town from Michigan.
Good evening, Emily.
He came to visit me in Los Angeles.
Yes, I did.
How you doing, Michael?
Glad to be here. Really glad to be here.
Even though he won't talk about his sex life.
Right.
Our relationship.
Right. We have some off limits. My lawyer sent over a contract, and I can't talk about my sex life in front of my baby sister.
Right. Exactly. And you, you've never listened to the show?
I have never listened to your show, but I hear it's really great.
I've been doing it for 8 years, 2,000 episodes.
Yeah. I'm sure it's great. But, you know, taking sex advice or listening to you talk about dildos or taking it up.
I've tried to give you some, too. You know, I think you'd like them.
You gave me a big pink one, and I took it home, and people walked in, and it was on the counter.
The children?
Not the children. That would have been some splaining. This was a big pink.
What vibrator? What was it? It was probably the dolly It was the rabbit habit from Vibratex.
It had a little clitoris stimulator on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So
how was that?
I didn't know what to do with it, so I put it like on my belly button and it didn't feel so good.
Michael, come on.
I'm just kidding. We never opened it. I left it on the counter, and then once my decorator and her assistant was walking through the house, and right after that, I just threw it away.
You did?
Yeah, I've never been with a woman who liked those things.
Oh, Jesus, Michael. We talk about this all the time on the show. You know why? Because you actually should, because it can really, first of all, cuts down your time in half that you have to spend pleasing. That
of
makes
course.
You feel better. And then a lot of men are afraid. They think it's going to be, you know, replace them. First of all, they don't cuddle. They don't whisper sweet nothings in your ear. But a lot of men like the vibrations as well. They like how it feels on their penis. And so I just think you should try it. And I'm going to give you another one before you go home.
No. Yeah, because explain that to the security guards when they see the big dildo.
Do you know how many times I've gone through security with hundreds of vibrators from Las Vegas? It's fine.
And what do they say to you?
They laugh. They're like, oh, funny.
Do they try to confiscate
them? I give it to them. I'm like, do you want one? You know, they don't care. Okay, so I got a question for you, Michael. So I think that my listeners would like to hear this because I do get asked all the time, no matter who it is, dates, people I work with, friends, family, you know, freaking someone I run into on the street who I don't even know, what the hell does your family think about what you do for a living?
We think you're all crazy. No. What do we think about it? You know, it's been so long that I don't think about it anymore.
Right.
He likes to stay in denial.
He's in denial about it.
Yeah, I think so.
A little bit. I mean, it's humorous when people ask me, what does your sister do? You know, I know she went to the University of Michigan, and she's got a great degree, and now she's got this doctorate, so she's now a doctor. What is she doing with all this? And, she's a sex expert. She's a what? You know, she is sex
you
expert.
Whisper, right.
And so it's, what are you going to say?
It's cool. I mean, you like it. You're down.
How do you feel when people ask you what I do?
He's you're a lawyer.
Boring.
Boring. Easy. Boring. One word answer.
Easy, boring.
Yeah, but it was good that you're lured. I actually am very envious of you sometimes. Because my brother was very linear. He went to college, he went to your law, and then he built this amazing law firm in Detroit, one of the largest personal injury firms. And The largest personal injury firm in Michigan.
Correct.
Amazing.
And I'm very proud of him.
Thank you. But it would be much cooler if you were a sex lawyer.
Yeah, exactly, Michael. Then we could work together.
What kind of case would that be?
I'm not
like
sure.
Some a woman.
You could represent
a penis
sex
or,
workers.
Yeah, you could do some good in the world.
So like it go to the.
And Anderson's here too. Anderson, there's so much going
sex
on
lawyer.
Tonight.
Yes.
I love Anderson. He's here helping out with the
he
show.
Seemed very nice. He helped me get some water earlier.
That was really nice of him.
Yeah. Helped him pee too.
You helped him pee.
And
that's
pee.
Sweet.
Well, just shake a little bit.
That's sweet, Michael. So did you have any questions for me at all? Anything going on with your life that you'd like to talk
questions
about?
Questions for you?
I don't know.
Any advice? You
any
need?
Advice? Or, was there any advice that you'd like to give me that you've learned in relationships
or sex?
Or sex.
Okay, definitely not sex.
Okay. How about relationships?
Stop dating guys named David. And
there's only five in a row.
And and stop dating Irish alcohol. Have you ever dated a Jewish guy? Why don't you date a Jewish guy?
I have. The Davids. A few of them.
They were?
There was five in a row.
None of the Jews
aren't
alcoholics.
Deanna?
Those guys
are. No. The alcoholics were years ago.
I don't know
a
Jewish alcoholic. Do you?
Yeah, there are some.
Oh,
but
I
not
know a Jewish. I have a client who's a Jewish alcoholic. I was actually thinking I really? Should set you up with him. He's really oh. cute.
He's sober. No.
But he's yeah,
but
Irish.
He's sober.
He's Jewish.
But he's not. He's
no, no.
Jewish.
The Irish was young, long, long time ago.
That
I
remember
did that.
Those dudes.
So, but no, I have dated, and for some reason, I moved to LA, and like I met five guys. Not that I dated them all seriously, but they were all named. So there was like. My friends were like, which one? Wait. I'm like, okay, D3, D4. And then there was actually a D5, David.
So she
five.
Could just leave a message on her voicemail. Right. This is Dave.
Hi, David.
Right. Don't call me because they're actually all gone now. So that's
what's
the story.
What's the next name going to be? But David's a nice
I
Jewish name.
Yeah, it is. They were Jewish. They were nice guys.
Okay.
Yeah, I know you don't want to meet anyone. My family banned meeting men that I date unless I was
well,
going to get married.
Well, she used to bring them home. Okay.
To
she used to bring them home. We'd have to like them. We'd have to introduce them to the kids.
Right.
My kids. And then the kids would fall in love because, you know, they're
right.
kids. And then. She goes back to California and says, yeah, I dumped him on the plane
ride
home.
No, but here's
home.
The thing. It was three times in
no,
20
I'm not
years.
You. I'm not kidding you. Okay, three times in how many years?
20.
Not 20. Three. We cut you off about 10, 12 years
right,
ago.
Right, so three times in 10 years.
Okay, okay. Three times in 5 or 6
years.
She brought home people, my kids. Then the next guy comes. I don't even remember any of their names. I'm not kidding you.
Right.
And my kids are like, well, where's Adam? We're like, oh, Adam was the last boyfriend. This is Brian. You know, and
this is Uncle Brian,
and the kids are like they don't get it, and you're teaching them some issues that actually Emily had
it's
when she
issue.
Was a child. When our dad used to bring home different women every other week, she's
oh
doing
God,
the same
Michael,
thing.
They were like 4 at the time and 3. They don't remember. You're wrong, but you're right. Our parents did. We went through a lot. They each had 3. You know, I attended 4 of my parents' weddings when I was 25, and then my dad. We'd see him twice a week, and every time we went out with him, he would.
Have a different woman.
He had a different woman with him.
And that is why Emily is a sex expert, unmarried, without children.
Well, because, Michael, stop.
Something.
The thing is that I worked through those issues.
That.
What?
So what do you work
did?
Through them?
Yeah.
Wait.
No, I've never wanted children or to get married, but I'm, you know, I'm a good place.
Why do you think that is?
It probably has to do with the issues, but,
okay.
You know.
Well, you just don't want to talk
but
about
it.
Is that too deep for you?
No, Michael, we talked. I've been doing 2,000 episodes and everyone's heard my story.
Oh, I apologize, audience, for repeating part of the story.
No, okay. So anyway, no, but that's probably why I became the reason why I started my show actually is because I've always been fascinated by relationships because I never saw a successful one.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand how they worked. And so mm-hmm. it really just started interviewing people about their sex lives, their relationships, how does it work? And
like
then
trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I was like, I don't get it. Like
right.
you have sex still after all, how do you keep it interesting? How
right.
do you stay with one person? All that stuff. So then I you know, I started doing this as a podcast in my living room like 8 years ago. But
That's
then it became
so cool.
Yeah, but then I became, you know, then I got my doctorate and started learning. But in the beginning I was just like, tell me everything because I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, thanks Mikey. I'm gonna move on to if you're welcome to pipe in and chat.
Okay, nice chatting with you.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, you're
okay.
a good guest.
He's a good guest. He's good. Okay, so hi,
that just
Deanna.
Got really tense and awesome. That was good stuff.
Really?
I like that, yeah.
You like that, Anderson? Do you have any
really
more?
Tense.
Do you have any questions for my brother? Because he will tell you anything about me if there's
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, I'll do it off air though. I'll hit him up after the
That's really kind of you because he'll tell you anything.
Mm.
Okay, Deanna, so we said, so you have your private practice now.
Right.
You started your own center.
I did.
Okay, so tell
I started
me.
A center for drug and alcohol treatment, and then there was such a need for relationship addiction and love and sex addiction that we just kind of moved in that area.
Right. Okay. So it's called the newmethodwellness.com is where
right.
people can find you. And so it's, I mean, I think that, well, first of all, how did you get started working in addiction?
I got started working in addiction about 20 years ago and a friend of mine opened a center and she said, can you come and teach a class? I just love the way you work with women because I did a lot of volunteer work. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. And I didn't even know it was a paying position. I just
right.
thought she wanted me to come help her at her center. And I loved it. And I just did really well. And so I went back to school and got my master's. And now I'm working on my PhD.
Okay. Oh, good for you.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
It's a lot
to
of work.
To work and go to school
and
have the
four
whole
kids.
Thing. You have 4 kids?
I have 4 kids.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's awesome.
God, I just never thought how I could do it all. That was another thing. I was like, I guess I'm just... My brain. I was like, work, work, work. And
well, you got to be kind of obsessive and crazy to live this way. Like, you have to, it has to be almost your pathology. Like, yeah.
I am obsessive and crazy.
So am I.
But also, you have kids. So that's a whole nother, like,
right.
thing. Okay. So,
I like find places in my calendar. I'm like, okay, today we're going to go swimming or whatever.
Right.
Just,
right. You have to.
Yeah.
I mean, right. And are you married?
Yes.
Are you somebody? Okay, good. It all worked out. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm always happy. I'm always happy when there's happily married couples, really.
We just celebrated our 10-year anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Is this your first?
Second.
Okay.
Exactly.
That's, what do you mean exactly?
I mean,
Michael's divorced recently.
I don't think, you're talking about being happy. Now she's happy on her second.
Right.
Way
no,
happier
a lot of people are happier.
First.
My brother did get
it's
divorced
hard to
after
be happy
22
first
years.
Marriage. I know very few happily married first timers.
Me too.
Unfortunately, that's true. And you know, the rate's like 50%.
And
yeah.
the second marriage is higher.
60.
And the third marriage?
I don't know that statistic. Well, my
dad, so I didn't mention the part that my dad died when I young, in 19, oh, after his, right after his third marriage. She might have killed him. We don't know. Just kidding. Not really. It was 20 years ago. She did not kill him. But whatever. So we saw that, and so I don't know about the third marriage. But my mom's happily, her third marriage has been 30 years.
Yeah. I think a lot of people think, like, okay, if I'm going to do this again, I really want to try harder. And, you know, I think a lot of people take their first marriage for, take it for advantage. Take
for
advantage
of, yeah,
it.
Yeah, they do.
Take it for granted.
And you don't know yourself well enough, too. I think people shouldn't get married before 30. Right.
I agree. People should
not
get married before 30.
I say that all the time. If you're like, what do you mean? But we're so in love. Like love line. People call every night. But what?
Every divorced person I know, man, says they're never getting married again, and there's probably a high statistic of them who do.
Really?
I agree.
Yeah. You say that too.
I'm not getting married again. I'm on record right now. Are we being recorded, Anderson?
We are being recorded, Anderson. We're recording the whole thing.
So, you know, somebody could come back and impeach me if I'm lying.
That's true. I would do that, actually. I would play this tape.
Right.
I would play this
right. Emily, at my wedding.
At your wedding.
At my second wedding, pull this out.
That'd be funny. You'd kill me.
Your speech.
Yeah.
That could be part of
your speech. I give good speeches at your weddings.
She gave my speech at my first wedding.
Yeah. It was a good one.
Weddings?
Weddings. My brother's not getting married again, but if he does, because he just declared that he'll never get married
again. Yeah, I heard all that, but you said, well, I thought, and then I heard him say that it would be his second.
Oh, no, I gave two good speeches at my mom's weddings.
Oh, okay, okay.
You gave a speech at my
wedding. And your wedding.
Yeah, so it would be her
second
speech.
And dad's wedding. I've given a lot of family I've been to. I only thought only parents got married before I was 25. Like, I didn't know that other people got married. Okay, so Deanna, so let's talk a little bit about love and sex addiction.
Okay.
I mean, also, we're going to talk about all kinds of addictions, but I find it so interesting that people... I feel like a lot of people could be love addicts and they don't even know it. So
I think most people that struggle with substance abuse, there's love addiction underneath it. And I can't believe I'm going to go on record saying that because it's so controversial in my industry.
Yeah, tell me.
But most, I'd say 99.9% of the people that come in and I do an assessment for their first checking into drug and alcohol treatment, 9 times out of 10, it's like the first thing they go to is, well, this person broke up with me, or I'm going through a divorce, or my spouse died or something. And that's what they're grieving. And that's why they started drinking. And then it became an issue.
So they weren't even drinking before.
Right.
So some people
or taking
think,
pills.
Right.
Or,
nothing. Right. It's a lot. Are you seeing a lot more pills these days?
I see so many pills. I could do, like, this friend of mine told me she went to a Pills Anonymous meeting and they could hold it in a gym.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's just ridiculous.
It's
like
rampant.
So many people. And, you know, I don't know if you know that most of those pain pills and narcotics are pretty much equivalent to heroin.
Yeah, they right, exactly.
So once they're addicted to painkillers, it's like getting somebody off heroin.
Right. They have to do serious detox, right?
Serious
they go under. I've heard the whole thing.
We do medical detox, yeah.
Wow.
It's
so
crazy.
And it's also, would you say in the last, you've been in it for 20 years, the last 10 years, has it become more
about
prevalent?
About 10 years, it's gone crazy. And, you know, a lot of people call it hillbilly heroin because it's so, like, rampant down there. And, what happens is most people, heroin's a lot cheaper and it gets a lot higher. So most people switch from pills to heroin towards the end. They're like, start with the pills and then they go, wow, I just can't keep this up. It's too expensive. You know,
what's the most popular pill you hear about?
Oxycontin.
Oxycontin. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oxycontin.
I thought you were going to say Vicodin, but I didn't.
No,
Vicodin.
Vicodin, Oxycontin, or Narcos.
Advil.
Advil. I don't have
that. Advil
abusers.
Michael, maybe you are.
I could detox you for Advil.
Yeah. That'd be in like 5 minutes.
With exactly. Emily's dildo.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we're going to give you a dildo tonight too, Michael.
Some water.
So here, take some of this. So wait, okay. So I was going to ask you, so love addiction, how do you know if you're a love addict?
That's true, right? Because how would you say, like, I don't know if I'm a love addict, like everybody has love issues.
Right.
I think that people are love addicts when they're actually hurting their own lives to stay in a relationship. And it doesn't necessarily have to be abuse, but there's like stages of love addiction. Like the first stage of love addiction is like... I'm obsessed with a person and I just can't stop thinking about it. It's all the time, all the time, all the time. And the second stage is like kind of like stalking. Like you pick up the phone, hang up, pick up the phone, call them and hang up. You drive by their house.
Wow.
Third stage love addiction is you're willing to risk your life for sex or love.
So it's almost like any addiction, like when it becomes life threatening.
Right.
Or when
and people say to me all the time, I would never risk my life for love or sex. Like, oh, really? You've never had unprotected sex with a stranger? And they go, and then everybody in the room raises their hand and goes,
right.
I've had unprotected sex with a stranger. I go, well, then that's risking your life.
Yeah. And there was a study that just came out that said people who cheat are more likely not to use protection. Have
right.
you heard this?
Yes.
Than people who are just dating or single. So it's
right.
like, Everyone just use a condom, okay?
Use a condom. Why is that? Gosh. I mean, it's just, it makes so much sense.
Why do cheaters not?
Is it because the same kind of person who like is in denial that they actually aren't going to? As soon as they like have a condom on them, then they're actually out looking. So then it's real.
I think that they don't have one on them, so they're that helps them stay in the denial of I'm not cheating. I'm just out doing my thing. It's like drug addicts will say to me, "Oh, I have to stop by my drug dealer's house and pick up this makeup I left there." And I'm like, "Really?
Right.
Go buy new makeup." And it's the same with cheaters. They'll say, "Oh, I have to stop by my ex girlfriend's house because I left something there." And I'm like, "Yeah,
not a condom."
Right, exactly. People should always have condoms. So when we were talking, I was reading some of the stuff that you've written and an interview you did that was so interesting because you talk a lot of it. Do you think it's more women than men?
Love addiction?
Or both?
Definitely. I think that women give sex to get love, right. And men give love to get sex.
Right.
So there's like this trade. And so, I mean, it's not always that way. I treat a lot of men that are love addicts as well. But I would say with love addiction, it's much higher on women.
Right. And so you talk about how, you know, when couples are together, you talk about love addiction, but also that it takes 3 years until you really get to know someone. And a lot of times people just jump into relationships so quickly and you don't really know anyone. This is why I say you got to wait before you marry someone. But can you talk about that theory and addiction?
I think that a lot of women get involved in sex before they know what the man is like, has planned for them. So oftentimes women will get involved in a sex relationship and they're like, "Oh, I have a boyfriend." And the guy's like, "You're not my girlfriend."
Right.
I didn't.
Exactly. Have the talk.
Have the talk before it gets in.
Right. Okay. So that's the 90-day thing. So you say to wait 90 days before you have sex with someone.
I know. And I'm not like a prude or anything. People just flip out when I say that. But I say that because I think that in the first 30 days, you're stuck in your fantasy honeymoon phase.
Right.
And it's like, "Oh my God, this is the greatest person in the world. I love them so much. They're so awesome." And then in the second phase, the second 30 days is like, "Well, I don't know. I don't like this about them. I don't like that about them." In the last 30 days, you really get to know, do I want to be with this person? Am I willing to sacrifice what it's going to take to be with this person?
Right.
Like, what if you've already had sex with them and then you're in 90 days and you're like, "I don't like them."
But if everybody followed that rule, the 90-day rule, there'd be a lot less sex in the world.
Well, I mean, we're saying wait 90 days before you meet someone.
But would it be less good sex?
When you
would
meet
it be less
someone, wait 90 days.
I'm with you, but you'd agree with my statement.
But
people would be broken up with them before the 90 days.
Because the guys would get upset that the woman.
I think most they fizzle mostly within 90 days. I think that the high low is 90, and I say it's more low.
So what I'm saying is, if you're pursuing long term relationship,
that's your bag.
If that's what you're looking for,
that's your jam.
You should wait because you want to know: am I really interested in this person? Are they an interesting person to me? And once you know, then you can say, "Do I want to share my body with them?" So many times, especially women, will just jump into bed and then go, "Oh my gosh, I don't really know if I like you at all. But now my body is bonded to yours by the oxytocin that's producing because I think that I'm in love with you."
Right. It's like the cuddle hormone.
It's like the 40-year-old virgin movie.
40-year-old virgin? Why? Right. What happened?
He waited. He didn't have sex and they waited and then they waited so long they fell in love.
Right. See? But this can happen. I think it makes sense because it is true. I always say that. Because people always say, "How long should I wait? 3 days? Should I wait 3? You know, I'm like, there is not a formula, but the longer you can wait, the better.
I don't disagree.
Because the thing is that you have sex with someone, and then all of a sudden you get attached, and then you can't see the red flags right in front of you because you're attached to his smell, his scent, the sex.
It's like
all you can think about.
You're bonded to this magic wand.
Right.
That's what Pat Allen used to say. She used to say, "Have you ever been bonded to a magic wand that you can't get away from?" And you're like, "I know this person is
my magic wand vibrator, but that's it."
See, it's okay because that person is not going to hurt your life. Your vibrator is not going to do anything bad in your life.
Right, exactly. Right. That's true. I'm just the name magic. But it is true. So that couples – so I think that's a good theory that people should probably wait. Now, what about couples who are just in their relationships? They are – dealing with some kind of addiction, whether it's
so hard.
So hard.
It's the hardest thing ever.
Right.
When people come to me and they say, "I don't know if my spouse is a love addiction, is an addict or a substance abuser," I always say, you should get help for yourself first. The first thing you should do is go to Al-Anon, go to therapy, get involved in something right away because you're suffering too. And you're like changing yourself to be with this addict and kind of running your life and your rules around them.
It's kind of like codependence relationships.
Big time codependency.
So what about codependency? Where is the line? Like, how do you draw the line between being supportive and being a codependent?
I get that question like every day. Parents ask me all the time, "When do I stop supporting my children?"
Right.
And I say, if you're supporting their recovery, support them. If they want to go back to college and you want to help them, that's awesome. But if you're supporting their disease, stop it.
Right.
Like, I have parents who will actually pay for their kids' apartments. The kids are like out doing drugs. They've got this great place. They're getting money every month, and they're getting this great place all set up. I'm like, adopt me. I'll go do drugs and live in that apartment. I mean, who wouldn't do that?
The parents are like blind to it, too, which might have led to their childhood issues and stuff that they haven't dealt with, and the parents aren't paying attention. They're just like, I just wanted him to be okay, and I don't really want to deal with it. So what advice do you have for people who are starting a relationship with an addict and they're in the beginning stages of a recovery? Obviously, they say you should wait a year before getting into a relationship.
Definitely wait a year.
And I think a lot of addicts just kind of, they're craving that.
Right.
You really have to. Hopefully they're working the program.
They want to switch drugs.
Right. One addiction for
the
next.
So, like, something is making me really high, like drugs and alcohol. And if I don't have that anymore and somebody takes that away, I'm going to look for something else to get me high. Well, sex and love gets you really high.
Right. Right. That's why a lot of
people are addicted to it.
Exactly.
They're addicted to the serotonin. They're addicted to the chemicals that your brain releases when you're about to have sex.
Right. Exactly.
Or when you are having sex.
Right. Totally. Okay, we got to take a call because, Michael, you'll like this. We have a caller from Michigan calling in.
Oh, what part of Michigan?
He doesn't say. He's calling in about the fleshlight, though. Hi, Steve from Michigan.
Hello, is this Emily Morse?
This is.
Dr. Emily Morse?
This is Dr. Emily Morse.
I've talked to you before. Yeah, my name's Steve from Michigan. I'm the one that said I'd buy you a car.
I know. Why haven't you yet? I don't understand.
Because I haven't got together with you yet. But I'm going to simplify your first question. I have two questions, but okay. I'm going to make the second one first right now. I cook, I clean, you can keep your career, and I'm a fabulous person. Will you marry me?
You're asking me to marry you.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. How much money do you got?
My brother's my manager.
What do you do for a living, Steve, in Michigan?
I work at an aircraft company. I build aircraft parts.
That's hot.
Are you like a mechanic type or an engineer type?
Engineer type. I think I could make her happy. Yes, I do.
You do? Why? Really? How? What would make me happy?
Email us a picture. Email Emily
a picture.
You're looking for the. I will. You're looking for the best of both worlds, Emily, and I can give it to you because your career is number one. I understand that from all your podcasts, and I would always respect and admire that, and always put that first in our relationship. Okay, because
that's your passion.
How much money does he have
again?
My brother's
money focused. Do you know my brother?
Send a picture of your bank statement with the picture, too.
Do you ever see my brother on TV in Michigan, Michael Morse? Okay, so Steve, thank you. Can I help you with something else? Because I'm not really ready to get married to you yet. I feel like we're just getting to know each other.
Right, well, this is what I was expecting. So this is number two, okay? And this is an important one. I think every guy out there wants to know. I checked your website. Is there a chance of Emily Morse Fleshlight coming out someday soon?
You know, I don't. My brother's shaking his head yes because he just wants me to make my own products.
You never know.
Okay, you'll be a billionaire. I mean, all the other ones look okay, but that would be one I would buy.
I do have a nice. It would be nice to get it molded and do that. You know, I'm just. I don't know. What would you would buy one, huh? So at least I know one would sell.
I'd buy a couple of them.
Would you buy 100?
The first one.
It's a masturbation sleeve. You know Fleshlight, right?
No,
do you know
I
it?
Don't.
Okay, it's a male masturbation sleeve. So it's like the number one selling sex toy for men. And men are like, oh, I got my hand, whatever. But if you use a Fleshlight, it feels really good. It simulates the actual feeling of sex. And some of them are just regular, but a lot of porn stars have their molded, the vagina molded after it. So you can pretend you're having sex with like...
I don't know if I can say this word.
You can say whatever you want.
Okay, so it's called a pocket pussy?
Yeah, pocket pussy. It's like that. But it's like a...
These friends of mine that are a gay couple, they have it. They're guys. And
they have a pocket pussy.
Oh, so they like the pussy.
I guess.
They deny it.
No, they want to, you know.
They want each other, but they want stamina training.
There's a lot of gay men here in L.A., I see. I was at the Abbey last night.
Oh, did you go to the Abbey without me?
Yeah.
Why? It's so fun. Wait, Steve. So, Steve, I'll let you know.
Before we move on.
Yeah.
We need to talk about your Fleshlight for a second.
Okay.
I have an idea for you.
Okay, go ahead. Do you think I should make one?
Absolutely. But I don't think you should actually go through the entire process of having, what do they put silicone up inside your vagina? How does that work?
They have a special material that's similar. I don't know what it is.
You don't have to tell anyone, but if somebody were to actually saw it in half, they'd see that it's in the shape of a microphone. How good would that be?
It probably is. It is so deeply ingrained to me to work in radio.
That's pretty funny.
So,
well, just something for you to consider, Dr. Morse.
Okay.
Sure. Okay.
Thanks, Steve, for calling in.
Retirement plan. Okay.
Okay, and I'll send you my insurance card. And we'll look for that car.
Okay.
And the bank statement. Have a great night. Bye, Steve. Anyway. Okay. So.
Yeah. I like Steve.
I
like Steve to be my future brother-in-law.
Would you?
Yeah.
Silly. Don't hold your breath.
So let me tell you something. If you're looking for someone.
Okay.
Okay. So you know when you walk into a party and you see that person and John Bradshaw calls them that you're
your Velcro person.
Yeah.
Like you walk in, you're like, oh, there could be 500 guys there. And that one guy's like, he's the one I'm really.
Right.
Okay. So run from that guy.
So right. I've heard. Because why? Tom, explain to me why.
Because if you have a history of having a broken picker.
Right. That's what Dr. Drew always says.
Yeah. He says broken picker.
He says your picker's broken. Not to me, but to callers on Loveline. Yeah. But I'm sure he would probably tell me if he had the opportunity. You know.
Yeah. So yeah. So let's say you have a history of a broken picker and then you look for you meet said guy at a party and you do your Velcro thing and you're all, you know, whatever.
Right.
Then he's probably going to be the same thing over and over again, which would, like Dr. Freud would say, is probably your issues with your dad.
Right. Is that what that I what that he. With all the women and stuff that I would. Okay. Yeah. But how would that be relate to the guy in the party that I'm attracted to?
Because you're probably attracted to something you want to change about your dad. And like that guy comes in and you go, oh, there he is. I can change him to be. I can finally change my dad.
I'm not one of the. No, but see, I think I have issues with abandonment more so than
right,
changing.
I never. Agree.
The guys always want to change me because they want me to commit. They want me to stop working.
So you're a little bit avoidant.
I'm like a dude, sort of. So I'm a little avoidant.
You're a little avoidant. So on the other side of love addiction is love avoidance. So you have the love addict who's like, come here, come here, come here. Do you like me? Are you mad at me right now? What's going on? Do I look pretty? Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And the love avoidance is like, I got to go. I'm busy. I'm working. I'm doing drugs.
That's what
I'm
I
drinking.
Do.
I'm doing something. I'm gambling, whatever.
I'm not doing drugs or drinking.
But you're working.
But I'm working. I'm a workaholic,
for sure. Me too.
So I feel like, that's what it is for me too. I think I do avoid
so
it.
So this is what you do. You duty date. Pat Allen taught me this. Do you know Pat Allen?
I do. You know, I haven't met her, but I love her work.
I love Pat Allen. I studied with her for 10 years.
You did?
Yeah. Like almost
we
got
to talk about that. I have so much to talk to you about.
Almost everything I say is Pat Allen.
Really?
Yeah.
And she's in LA, right?
Yeah. She's in LA and Orange County.
Okay.
And she's amazing. And
you
she saved
studied
my life.
With her? At
yeah,
your,
for
like,
10 years.
Did you get a degree from her? Or?
No, I didn't. Some people do, but I just studied with her for 10 years, but I got my degree somewhere
else. Got it. I'd love to hear about it. So what did she say to you?
She said that you should duty date. She says you should duty date. You should go out with guys that you're not like Velcroed to, that are just
I've been doing that lately.
And you just date them and date them and practice dating. And pretty soon, like, you'll have a relationship with one of them. Because that whole concept of, like, Velcroing with somebody is what is going to be your pathology. That's what's going to be the bad part for you.
Right. But what if they're – so do you think that everyone has – that no one should date the person that they see their eyes meet across the room? Or you're saying just
she
anyone who's trying to break a pattern?
I said it wrong.
You said to run.
To run, definitely run.
Right.
But do I think everybody should do that? Like not date that guy? I think most of us come from kind of dysfunctional backgrounds.
Right.
And most of us are looking for something to fix or change or be different.
Because usually when things start hot and heavy in that first attraction and you're going to it, that's not usually as the longevity either.
Right.
It's just the attraction. If I see someone across the room, it's probably because I'm attracted to him in a certain way.
And right. And it's probably totally something in them that you want to be different from your own background.
Right. Okay. Good to know.
So
I get a little.
So you should have like a week commitment to duty date or
I do,
30
you know,
days.
I have been. There was someone that I I've gone out with that I was like, oh, I don't think so. No, and I, you know, it's been a few days and I like them. I do.
This guy that I want to set you up with, this Jewish guy, he is from Michigan.
Seriously? Yeah. I wonder if we know him.
If he's listening, that's hilarious. He's going to call me and be like, okay, Deanna, I can't believe you did this.
Well, this podcast. Okay, so we can't listen now, but tomorrow when we release it, tell me. So, we'll talk about it.
No. He can't hear this.
What's he like?
She's telling you to go out with people you don't like.
No,
you're not attracted to.
Why do you think I like him? But how long is he sober?
He's sober like 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say his
name.
And
why would you think that we would be good? Just because he's Jewish and from Michigan?
No. He's fabulous. He's just amazing.
Okay.
He's a really neat guy.
He's a friend of yours?
No, he's ex-client.
Ex-client. Oh, my God. Okay. Well,
but he's really amazing. And he's cute. And he's adorable. And he's, you know, successful and everything. And I keep telling him, I got to find a girl for you.
Okay. I'm open to dating. You know, in fact, since I moved to LA about a year ago, year and a half, I really haven't, again, avoidance. But I moved here for work. Mm-hmm. I was in San Francisco for 20 years. And this has just been amazing. It's been so great. But, again, it's another excuse not to make time to date. So I'd love to do it.
That's why you got a duty date.
Okay. I want a duty date. Get back to that in a minute. But first, another word from our sponsors here. And I just want to thank everyone for listening to the show. As you know, I love being able to help you have the sex life and relationships you deserve. And I want to give you the best show possible. So thank you for supporting my sponsors who help keep this show free. So I got to tell you about Promescent. Did you know 1 in 3 men suffers from premature ejaculation? Well, now you don't have to, because Promescent is a quickly absorbing delay spray that allows you to have the sex you want. You don't even have to think about baseball or your great aunt Margaret with the furry mustache. You can focus on your partner's hot body, especially now that you have the time to make them orgasm. Also, Promescent closes the arousal gap between men and women. You might get there a little faster than she would like. Maybe she takes her 20 minutes to orgasm and you only go for 5. This would allow you to go for 10. So Promescent helps you last twice as long, thousands of urologists are recommending Promescent, the only FDA-approved treatment for premature ejaculation. Go to Promescent.com to find out more. That's Promescent. Or just go to SexWithEmily.com and click on the banner. And also, have to talk about No-No because I love my No-No Pro. I've spent way too much time and money on razors and waxing. No-No Pro is the best way to remove unwanted hair with no pain. It's so easy. You can do it sitting on your couch, whether it's your legs, your arms, your face, and it's for men too. You know that hair on your back, the long neck hair, all that stuff? You will love how easy this is to use and the weeks and months of long-lasting results. No-No Pro comes with a 100% 60-day money-back guarantee, and when you purchase it, you'll get a $50 gift card to an award-winning skincare line. Go to nonoemily.com. That's nonoemily.com. Okay, we were talking about my avoidance. Okay, but we'll get I'll get fixed up with your guy.
Yeah,
I like it. I'll do it. Okay, so how does addiction and recovery? Like, do you think two people who are Do you think they make better partners if they're both going through, like, let's say it's already the year has passed?
It's so hard to say.
Do you think it's hard to for people who are
both in recovery?
Yeah.
It's so hard to say because, sometimes I joke and say I only want one crazy in the relationship. Like, one of us is
enough. Right, right. I've heard that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's enough crazy in one relationship because I'm kind of neurotic. And so I'm neurotic enough for both people.
Right.
But on the other hand, you get to know somebody and you know what their goals are and you know what their aspirations are and you kind of are thinking the same way. But then there's a risk too. What if they relapse?
Right, exactly.
That's scary.
It is really scary. And
but
you're always wondering.
Scary.
Yeah, that's true. It's all about risks.
Well, you owe me a Coke.
Oh, I know. I love it. Okay, can you? I did. I got you a Diet Coke. Can a recovering addict be in a relationship with someone who is not an addict?
Oh, definitely.
Can they still enjoy alcohol and drugs? If they're not an addict, but their partner is. Can they still have a glass of wine?
I think of it this way. Like, I don't drink alcohol because I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Right.
And my husband will have a beer or something. And I think of it this way. Like, if you're allergic to peaches and you come to my party, you're not going to be like, nobody can have peach pie. I'm allergic to peaches. You're going to be like, have your peach pie. I'm going to have some ice cream. I'm good.
Exactly.
So that's just ridiculous to live in a world where you think no one's ever going to have a drink in front of you.
Exactly. Because I think, and then people always like tiptoe around it because I have friends and I've dated guys in recovery. And I have a lot of friends who have gone through it and I've also gone to a bunch of AA meetings with them. It's so funny because my therapist for a while, I was like, I love AA, but I'm like, I'm not addicted to drugs. I'm not addicted to sex. And I was like, I want to work the steps. They seem so amazing. Like, I feel like every time I leave, I feel so much better because I think anyone can get anything out of the meeting.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was just a joke. She's like, well, maybe you could go to SLAA. So, like, I went to, like, a Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous meeting, but it didn't jive with me. Like,
yeah,
I don't
it's
think
different.
I have a sex and love. Yeah.
It's different.
I was like, but I want to work the steps. What can I do?
You can go to Al-Anon.
Oh, that's true.
You can go to Al-Anon and you can go to CODA. CODA is a great program.
Codependent.
Anonymous,
I'm codependent. Either. I'm so independent. I'm not codependent.
Yeah. I think
if anything,
you're a little more counterdependent. Do you know what counterdependent
is? No, but I need to be more dependent on people.
No, counterdependent is like this. I don't want anything from you and you don't want anything from me. I won't ask you for anything. You don't do anything for me and I'll be happy.
Yes.
So then it leaves you a little bit lonely.
Yeah, that's true. I'm like, oh, I'm cool. I'm independent.
Yeah, I got this.
I got this. I don't need you. Right.
So I'm going to guess that you're a better giver than a receiver.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I would say you should practice
receiving.
We found
my meeting. I should.
Practice receiving. Like, that's what Pat Allen would say. She would say,
oh my God, I want to meet her.
Yeah. Oh, she's so amazing. She's just incredible.
I've heard, everyone just raves about her.
And she's hilarious and she's really direct. And people will go up and they'll do therapy in front of 200 people and she'll go, has he been in? Just straight
inside
up.
Right.
Yeah, inside you. And that's what I always say too. If a couple comes to me, the first thing I say is, has he been in? Because if he's been in, we're dealing with something totally different than if he hasn't.
But how would a couple come see you if they haven't? You mean in sex?
Right.
But does a couple come see you if they haven't had sex yet?
No.
But
that's
I get
true.
It. Again, it's just funny. Yeah. Okay, can we talk about emotional vampires?
Yes.
That is so interesting, your whole theory about it. So tell me about emotional vampires. We all have that. People drain us. We have lunch, family members, like my brother. They just kidding. They drain you. And how do you, their energy, what do you do?
So boundaries. Boundaries, 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 boundaries. And there's this fine line between setting boundaries and being an avoidant. Right?
Right.
So I'm just going to bail on everybody and keep a big wall up and nobody's going to bother me. But it's all about boundaries and being direct. I'm a really direct person and I think it comes off kind of cold sometimes.
It can, right?
And especially for women. We live in a culture where women, if they have any boundaries or stand up for themselves, then they're bitches.
Right. Totally. That's a total double standard.
What
makes
is that?
Crazy. It makes me crazy.
Or
that's
they're bossy. Did you see that ad about bossy? Oh, it's about little girls. Like when little girls are assertive and they know what they want, people call them bossy.
Right.
When little boys want it, they're fabulous and successful and wonderful. I think that the world is going to change big time when women learn how to say no.
Say no just to anything.
Anything
any
they
requests,
don't want. Yeah,
right.
And not feel like, oh, I'm such a bitch because I said no.
Right.
And learn to receive. When women start saying like, okay, I want this or I want that or I'm accepting this instead of, because we're so quick to go, I got this, I'm fine.
Right.
Leave me alone.
That's true. That's true. And especially sexually, too, women have to learn to say no and to say yes and to ask for what they want in the bedroom and to be assertive. I always talk about that on the show, too. That women, well, yeah.
Like
so
saying
women,
yes and saying no.
Right.
Like the world
setting
is going to change when women learn how to say no.
Absolutely.
Big time. When
do you talk to, because self-esteem, too, is a huge thing for women that they just have lower self-esteem and they don't really know their pleasers and we're raised that it's all about pleasing the man and it's not about our own needs. We put them on the back burner and...
And, you know, we treat a lot more men than we do women because women won't leave the home and go get treatment.
Right.
And men are just like, okay, bye.
Because of the kids.
Like, when's the last time a man said, oh, I got to get a babysitter. I can't go out tonight.
Right, exactly.
Never.
Right.
First
right.
and never.
Right, it's
but
true.
But women have to say, you know, like, oh, I got to get a babysitter. I don't know. I have to talk to my husband first. You know?
Right, it's true.
But the whole thing about women in bed, it's just.
Yeah, let's talk.
It makes me crazy. I talk
know,
to my clients
too.
All the time and I say, well, what's stopping you? What's stopping you from saying, I really like this or I don't like that? And they go, well, I don't want to hurt his feelings.
You're sending mixed... I mean, we talk about this in the show. You're sending mixed messages.
Right.
Don't ever fake an orgasm. I was going to start, like, put a proposition on the ballot, like, no one fake O, like, trying to get people...
I love
like,
that.
I know. I was like... Because women don't realize that it's...
It's confusing
to men. He's
going
to think he's the king of the universe.
Right. And he's going, I did this thing that you loved. And you're going, well, I didn't really love it. I was just kind of trying to make you feel
right.
good.
Because we want to please them, because men do get, they're like, if you don't have the orgasm, we're like, oh, I'm just going to fake it because I want it over with. And here's the thing that they've noticed, sometimes we don't have orgasms and it's fine. It's still pleasurable, sex is still great, but just don't fake it. And also, I think that couples need to start to, because here's another part, talking about the 90-day thing or people who you don't really know anyone after 3 years. I think right after you start to have sex with someone is when you start the sex conversation or even before.
Before.
Because you might, yeah, before. Obviously, you talk about safe sex and all that,
yeah.
but about like what your needs and things you want to try, what your desires are in the bedroom. I think, either, you know, a lot of women might not even know because their whole life they have
right.
been pleasers. But imagine how, and couples I hear from all the time, they're like, I don't know how to do it. We've been together 20 years.
I've treated women who've never masturbated.
Right.
And they say to me, I've never masturbated. I'm saying, how do you know what you like?
Yeah.
Like, how can you tell somebody else what you like if you don't know what you like?
Exactly. I was just writing about this day for Glamour. I'm actually writing for Glamour magazine now, Sunday nights,
Yoo-hoo.
On their website. Yeah, glamour.com,
awesome.
I guess, is their thing. And I'm writing sex ed. And my first column today was about, it's going to be on this Sunday, is about masturbation is the most important work that women can do sexually to have
right.
the most fulfilling sex life. Because if you don't know your own body, I always say, so women believe that someday my prince will come and so will I.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to ride up on a white horse. Mm-hmm. He's going to come. He's going to show up.
Don't you think more men would be better in bed if women were honest?
Yes, absolutely.
If women said, no, I don't really like that or I do like that, do more of that.
Exactly.
Then men would know more.
Right. But we're not brought up, but they're not taught. And even now they're not taught that in school. I mean, I certainly was. I mean, I never even... knew about masturbation. It never even occurred to me on my own about masturbation until my friends were talking about orgasm. I was like, what? The what? Like, I came from like a really liberal home.
Yeah.
It just, for me, so that's why I was like, I'd love to teach, you know, young women about their bodies and sex and just so you can have a fulfilling life, like long life of good sex because, he's not going to figure it out for you. She, whoever you're with, like
right.
You might have to put in some work, and you might not have orgasm the first time.
Not only do you guys not say what you like, but you pretend to like things you don't.
That's what we
right.
were just saying,
yeah.
and that really is confusing to men because they're like, "Well, I thought you liked that for six times,"
and
you're
it's
like,
"So simple."
Ugh.
It's like if you had an itch on your back, like, "Could you scratch my back? I got an itch in the middle," and then you guys would just be like, "Yeah, you got it." When we weren't even close.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so confusing. Like, why do that? What's the point of that? Women think, oh, I'm going to make him feel better about himself.
Right.
But I think it makes, in the long run, it makes him feel worse about himself because he can't really fulfill her.
Do you think part of it also is that you guys feel uncomfortable sometimes and you just want it to be pleasant or at least seemingly pleasant and over as quick as possible so you're not awkward?
I think sometimes that's the case why women might fake it because they're like, it's not going to happen. But I also think that women are afraid they're going to be judged. if they know that right. much about what they like, right. then if, he thinks she's right. a whore. Oh, she knows her it's body that well.
Yeah.
But it's such a, I feel like that's right. such
or
an
Or she's
old...
really into it, or she's really having a great time.
Right.
What's wrong with her?
But that's
how
not
much, how many partners is she? She must be. Yeah. It's not
all
the case.
All I ever hear from guys is they hate dead fish. They hate it when girls just lay there.
Exactly.
They really get upset
yeah,
about that.
They
over
do.
And over and over again. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
And the
I mean,
number
that's good
one.
For the callers to know for sure.
For sure. That
like
that,
if you are a
I
woman,
like the dead fish myself. It's a quiet time.
You are a dead fish or you like a dead fish?
I like
He's
the
married.
Dead fish.
You yeah. like your wife's a dead fish?
I like her to be quiet. Yeah. Don't show
quiet,
me too much enthusiasm. Don't act like a porn star. Just be quiet and let me do my thing.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Yeah. But most people.
But that's why they work. They're very happy. But does she ask? But you know what she likes.
Yeah, you got to pay attention. I've said on the show numerous times, you pay attention. Whether they're saying it or not, if you watch closely, you'll be able to tell with like toes
and hands.
Don't you
think it's about people are so afraid to be vulnerable?
Yes. People are afraid to be vulnerable.
Yeah,
how can you
yeah,
be vulnerable?
Because you got to let yourselves go completely
right, but
to get to that
place.
How can
you be vulnerable with somebody you just met 3 days ago?
Exactly. And how
for
can you
guys,
even orgasm?
It's completely different. We don't have to be vulnerable. Like it just happens.
Because
we're
men
simple.
Don't get the oxytocin no. that bonds until they're old. Like you see old men that are like hooked on some 20-year-old and they're like, ah, God, God. And they're like going crazy and doing things they never did before. That's because they didn't start getting oxytocin until they got older. The chemical
what
in
age?
Their brain.
How do I cut that off when I get older?
I can't wait to see you.
I can't wait. You'll be all
in love with your wife.
Is there a pill
that counteracts
that? Oh, honey, come here.
What age do you think it is that men start getting more of the oxytocin?
I don't
40s,
know.
50s?
Like the scientific age. I'm going to guess it's around 60.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
that,
you know
okay.
how men start getting more oxytocin and they start getting more estrogen right. and they're like gardening and women right. start like running for senator.
Exactly.
And, you know,
it's true. I'd say it's more like 50s and stuff. I
so women get
more 40s.
Testosterone.
Right. It's true. It's funny yeah. how it switches. But I do think that and if you're a guy, you're with someone and I just think it's imperative that if she won't talk to you about it. I mean, I hear this all the time. She won't keep pushing it. Not pushing it in an aggressive way, but be like, babe, I want you to be happy. I want to, you know,
and
order
let her
spicy
know that
subscriptions.
You're not gonna,
you know,
let
like,
her know that you're not going to judge her.
Right. You're not going
to
judge her.
I'm not here to judge you. And like, I'm not going to even make a joke like, oh, what a slut you are.
Right. I won't even joke. I won't even joke that you're a slut. I don't
yeah,
think that you're a slut.
Only say that in a good way.
Exactly. And I just wish that women would, because then once they do know their bodies and they take that time, mm-hmm. then they'll really be able to explain it to their partners and right. have better sex. So what about people who are getting sober? I always hear people like they're afraid because I had a best friend in San Francisco who got sober and she was drinking her, you know, she's been sober now for a while, long, 10 years. But when she first got sober, I would have to go on dates with her because she'd been drinking, you know, since she started dating. So she was 15 and then mm-hmm. she was like 32 at the time. And she said she was so terrified to even be on a date. Couldn't talk to men without having a drink. It's like I had to go and say, okay, I'll call her Shelly. Shelly, tell them what you used to do. You know, like she was, people think they can't function without
I think most of
the alcohol.
Oftentimes
or
people
drug.
are medicating, self-medicating social anxiety with alcohol.
Exactly.
Because alcohol is a depressant. People come into me and they go, well, I drink a lot and I'm really depressed. And I go, well, alcohol is a depressant. Like, biologically, it's going to depress you if you drink a lot of alcohol.
Right.
You're going to walk around during the day feeling kind of depressed.
Right.
It brings you down.
And then you want to drink again because you've got to bring you up.
And
it's a vicious
serotonin
cycle.
And it's a vicious cycle.
Right.
But if you're self-medicating social anxiety, what happens when the alcohol gets taken
exactly.
away?
Exactly.
You go on a date and you're like, I was.
She was terrified. And what about
skin.
Sexually, too? Well, she got over that, but then eventually the sex thing
right.
was scary, too, because a lot of people, even their first kiss, they think, God, I've never even had a first kiss when I
right.
didn't have a little liquid courage.
And that's terrifying.
Right. So I'm sure that you talk to a lot of people about that as well.
Yeah. And sometimes I talk to, like, I'll have men's groups and we'll talk about what it's like to just talk to women sober, because a lot of women, men say, like, I can't talk to a girl unless I'm liquored up.
Right.
I can't walk up to a group of women and go, hey, what's up? How are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. You know,
they, men have
they
so
feel
much
embarrassed,
fear too.
You know,
yeah.
and they're terrified of the rejection. So we'll have groups.
I'm sorry. I heard some great advice on this just last night.
You did?
It was fantastic. I wish I had it before I was married. When you're talking to a girl, like a pretty girl, and you're a guy, pretend like it's your girlfriend's really good friend or your sister's really good friend.
Oh,
no, your sister's.
Awesome.
No, your girlfriend's really good friend. That just stopped there.
Right.
That's great advice.
I have a client right now that I'm going to use that for.
Yeah.
If I had that, oh. Be no stopping
Dude,
me
you
back
were
in the
fine,
day.
Though, right?
I was okay.
I understand it was fine, but it is true. They got to get over that. But I also got some questions today. I posted that you were going to be on the show from my listeners. If they had some questions, I'm going to give this out to it. And I'm also, my guest tonight is Deanna Jordan. And your website, so people can find you, is newmethodwellness.com.
Right.
If you're just catching up with the show. So some of the questions were, is there any way to know whether your partner can actually overcome their long-time addiction before it sabotages the relationship?
So what I would say to you is, listener is that, a writer, is that it's not really important to focus on what your partner is doing. It's important to focus on you and taking care of yourself.
Right.
You're completely powerless over whether your partner's going to get well or not.
Right.
And once you accept that, because people say to me all the time, why should I go to Al-Anon? And I kind of trick them. I say, go to Al-Anon so you can learn how to deal with an alcoholic.
Right.
But really, it's not for that. Really, it's to go to Al-Anon and learn how to deal with your own stuff.
Exactly. Because women, again, typically put, or men, but they put their stuff on the back burner.
Right.
And so, and they think someone's going to change. That is one thing that my mom told me after her second marriage, which I always remember. I was like 14 and she looked at me. She's like, you men don't change. People don't change. You know, you can't date on potential. No one is ever.
Right.
You
have to totally what you see agree is what with you don't get. Date on potential.
No, you can't. You really. And
my mom said to me when I got married, she said, you should only get married if you can deal with this person exactly the way they are right now for the rest of your life.
Right. Exactly. It's true. Because maybe they'll change, and if they want to change, but you keep, there are no guarantees.
Right, because acceptance is all about, like, your perceptive and your acceptance. Like, am exactly. I going to accept this person for who they are, or am I going to sit around and wish they could be somebody else?
Right, and I think that a lot of, would you say women do that more than men?
You know, I used to think that. I used to think, like, and I think that's because I am a woman, and right. I've experienced it from the love addict side, but I really truly believe nowadays that I've dealt with the equal amount of men right. that have just been burned by women. And they're just like, men come to me all the time and say, all women burn you and blah, blah, blah. Right. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, you can't draw. It's not. So, there's no stereotype. Right. It's everyone.
It is.
Another question from a listener. How can you discuss with your partner how their addiction and deceptive tendencies have hurt the relationship without it seeming like an attack?
You have to say it straight up because, you know, addicts are so manipulative that it's always going to be, they're always going to go on the defense.
Right.
So, like, I'll come into work, right, and I'll have a client, and I'll just go, you look loaded to me, like, straight in their face. And they'll say, oh, I'm not loaded. How could you say that? How could you talk to me that way? And I'm like, you look loaded. I can tell. I'm a drug and alcohol counselor.
Right,
I have
tell.
A history with drugs and alcohol. You're loaded. You're lying to me. I don't
believe you. Do they ever fess up? Like, oh, yeah.
For a while, they'll say, no, and I'll go, I don't believe you. I think you're lying. I just say it straight up because
right.
what good is it going to do for me to – but like I said, sometimes people perceive me as kind of, like, direct
I like
and
it.
Cold.
That's why you're so good. You're such success and you're so good at what you do. You're very passionate about it and direct. I think that's
direct.
Important. People
you
don't want
to
their therapist
direct.
To mess. You want direct.
But do you want to spend 10 years with somebody like waiting for them to change
no.
and hopefully they'll quit drinking and blah, blah, blah. No, just tell them straight up, look, you have a problem and I don't want to live with it.
Right. Exactly.
And I'm either going to leave or I'm going to accept you the way you are as
well,
a drunk.
Why people are so afraid because they're afraid that they're going to lose them and that they're
right.
really in
and
love.
There'll be nobody else.
Right.
There's a bazillion people out there.
I
why would you
think
there's nobody else?
Right. Everyone. I think that people believe that all the time. I think, what if I
Nobody's
don't find anyone
ever going to come along?
There's like a gazillion people in the
world. There's a gazillion people in the world.
Right.
And there's so many people that are suited for everybody.
Right. I don't believe that there's like one person that's like magically in the universe now that I'm supposed to. My friends all think that. They're like, you just haven't met the one. I'm like, I've dated a lot of people. I've been out there. It's not, I think I haven't been open to it or ready, but I am moving to a point where I think I am recently.
Oh,
it's a new phase.
That's awesome.
Like, I'm really ready. Like, I'm
yeah, because you're duty dating.
I'm duty dating.
Yeah,
I am.
Like the whole weight thing, you know, like I waited with my husband and then I ended up marrying him.
Because you waited how long to have sex or
yeah.
to? You waited the 90 days.
Well, not total 90, but
right.
I'll be honest.
Okay.
Because it's you.
Yeah, it's me. Oh,
and
I love that you're
National
here.
America.
Right.
But yeah. I waited with my husband. It's funny. I told him, I said, we're going to have to wait 90 days. He goes, yeah, that's not going to work for me. I go, yeah, no, that's my deal. I wait 90 days. And
right.
he's like, yeah, that's not going to work. It was hilarious.
That's so funny.
But
and
we ended up getting
down.
Married. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
How long did it take? Well,
we really waited about 30 days.
Okay. But that's good. That's still
yeah.
more than most people.
But I always
days.
Say, like, if you can't wait 90 days, if you can't do the rule, then just wait till you know what their plans are.
Right.
And I did wait for that. I said, I need to know what your plans are. Do you want me
right.
to be your girlfriend? Or because I'm looking for a relationship. I just
right.
want to be straight. So many women are afraid to say, look, I want a relationship. I want to get married. I want to have kids. They're like, oh, I might scare him off. Then he's not the one for
right.
you.
Right, exactly. You want someone who matches your goals. If
right.
Why would you hold that back?
Why would you even waste your time on a dinner?
Right.
With somebody who doesn't want anything you want. You're going to spend all this time trying to change them?
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense.
To appetizers, you can find this out and then leave. Like, why is
right.
it like getting ready for dessert? Or like, he
right.
doesn't want what I want.
Right.
And people do not, they don't even find this information out when they get married. Like, I talk to people all the time. You probably do. We got married and I realized that he didn't want kids. How does this not come up?
How do you, like, go to the church or the whatever
right,
and
right.
find it without knowing that this person doesn't want to have
understand.
Kids?
I don't understand. I don't understand. People, you need to, the bottom line. I always say communication is a lubrication. It is going to help you with your sex life, but it's going to help you with everything.
What
couples
do you tell people
who
have been married for a long time?
About spicing up, about
yeah.
keeping it interesting?
Yeah.
I just tell them that you've got it. It's like ripping a Band-Aid off. If you've never talked about it, you just got to start saying, honey, I like our sex life. You know, I love you. And I just think that we could have some fun together. And let's try some new things to make it more interesting. Don't make it like a whole heavy talk.
Okay. So one of the things I tell couples that have been, because I have couples come in and they've been married for 20 years and they haven't had sex in 3 years.
Right.
I'm like, how do you live like that?
Right.
How do you live in the same house and you haven't had sex in 3 years?
Because you're roommates. Right.
How can you do that? And what I always suggest is, okay, you got to like make it, do it whether you want to or not. Once a week. Just like connect, bond with this person, be in the same space as they are.
Right. It's true.
So whether you want to or not, just do it.
It's like going to the gym.
You're always glad afterwards.
That's what I said. I said, like, going to the gym, the hardest part is getting dressed and putting your shoes on. But once you make yourself, you get into the sex routine. I also have a 30-day sex challenge that I always talk about. I actually have an iPhone app called Emily's Sex Drive. And every day, it helps to help couples. It sends you a little tip of what you should do that night. It's like 30 days of a sex drive, like how you pledge, like a toy drive. You pledge to keep your sex alive. And I do think that if you pledge to have sex every day, you know, for 30 days. But again, it doesn't have to be sex. You could even say for the first week, we're going to take sex off the table. We're just going to touch. We're going to get to know each other.
Massages.
That's what I tell you.
Right.
Massages. I'm actually giving you a wonderful massage candle after this. I've made candles. I know. I'm going to give
them.
Yeah. But give a massage. So if sex has been your issue, like, take it off. Get to discover each other's bodies again, because you can bring it back, but it might take some work.
Well, I always
But you got to really to commit. It's your relationship.
It's a therapist's job to say what nobody's saying in the room. You know, so I'll have a couple come in and like they say, I'm like, you haven't had sex in 3 years. And they like freak out that I just said that out loud.
Right,
like they've been walking around holding it. And I go, you haven't had sex in 3 years. And they go, well, blah, 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 blah. So then I say, okay, so we're going to have sex this week. You guys are going to have sex this week. That's your homework for the week. And then I find out like he has erectile dysfunction or maybe she's has problems or something. I'm like, I can't believe no one has talked about this in 3 years.
I know. Never comes up. I mean, it astounds me. I'm always saying to couples that like, why they're emailing me these long questions. And I'm like, 20, have you talked to your partner about it? No, they don't know how. They're afraid. And even in new relationships, men and women don't know how to talk about that. Sexual dysfunction, erectile dysfunction, pretty much anything that's going on. It's like they pretend it's not there. It doesn't happen because it's so – something about sex is so taboo. I actually just did a show yesterday about sex scripts. I think it's coming out next week. Like scripts of how to talk. We did a little role-playing about how to talk to your partner about things.
I do role-playing with my clients all the time. Like I said, we'll have guys role-play like walking up to a group of women.
Right. Because they might reject you, but or whatever.
But just
you
practice.
It's
just
all
keep
about
practicing.
Role playing is it's like when you're giving a speech and you do it over and over again. I mean, it's important. I think that's great that you do that work. Okay, so Deanna, we're going to have to wrap up. I feel
like
I could talk to you for 16
hours. I could talk
hours.
To you for like a year.
That's how I feel. Will you come back on my show? Because I have like 18 more questions
it's
for you.
It's so fun.
I know. Isn't it fun? I'm so glad you're here.
Valerie told me she goes, you're going to love her. She's so funny.
That's so sweet. I'm glad that she connected us. And I think it's really valuable and good work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And if anyone wants to see, do you see individuals?
I do see individuals. I do see a lot of individuals. And I see couples. And I see drug addicts and alcoholics. And we do whatever we can to help.
Okay. So it's newmethodwellness.com.
And it's in San Juan Capistrano, California.
Got it. Okay. Do you ever do phone calls? Or do they have to see you in?
I do Skype.
You Skype. That makes
so
much sense.
Yeah.
You Skype calls. Okay. Deanna Jordan, thank you so much for being on the show. And
thanks
my brother Michael.
Me. Thank you.
Thanks for stopping in. Any final words that you'd like to say? Anything you learned during the show? Since you've never listened to my show?
I learned a lot. I didn't even know there was such a thing.
As what?
Some of these things, love addiction and whatnot, and how it interacts with the other addictions. Very fascinating.
Oh, thank
good.
You.
Good. I'm glad to see you learned something on this trip.
Yeah, you guys didn't talk about sex too much. That's okay.
We did.
I took a little nap on the couch. I'm
Michael was
lie.
Napping. He's tired. He's on Michigan time. Okay, well, thank you, Michael Morse, for joining us. And thank you, Anderson. What's on your podcast this week? Anything that we can't miss? Don't want to miss? Are you talking?
Sorry, I got a micro Catherwood and Dr. Drew in here.
Forget it. Okay,
what are you asking now? What?
I was saying, what's up with the podcast this week?
Oh, yeah, Film Vault. Doing good.
Film Vault.
It's doing
fantastic.
Nothing
else to say? Okay, good. Well, thanks for that.
Live show after disaster, but you have to be a listener to get it. That's going to be at the Improv July 12th.
Okay. Oh, thank you for reminding me. Improv July 12th. Do you guys have a website? Just go to your broadcast?
Yeah, just go to the afterdisaster.com.
Okay, one more thing. I'm doing a workshop at Hustler.
Blowjobs.
No, it's called How to Blow His Mind. Yeah, right. It's called How to Blow His Mind in Bed, and it is at Hustler in Los Angeles on Sunset Boulevard. It's an amazing store on July 16th. So if you go to my Sex with Emily page on Facebook, you'll see the invitation on the left-hand side. Click on it, learn more, or email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. I hope to see you out there, meet my listeners, all that. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Sex with Emily. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Have you ever heard of a massage candle? Well, it looks like a regular candle that instantly turns into massage oil. Because massage gets your partner in the mood, and the warm, luxurious oil feels amazing when you pour it on. That's why you need a massage candle. It is your secret weapon in the bedroom. If you want to spice things up, get your partner in the mood and have incredible sex. And the feedback has been outstanding. And yes, these are my candles, Emily and Tony, but I tried them all out in the market, and they, I have to say, they're the best. From one of my listeners, dear Emily, I bought a candle. My girlfriend was skeptical at first, but agreed to try the warm oil on me first and gave me a back rub. Then I reciprocated, and we had amazing sex. She cannot stop talking about how good the candle smells and how great the massage oil feels. And I am convinced that the scent and the candle helped us through some of the barriers to sex that we have faced lately. So I created these candles so you can have the best sex of your life. Go to emilyandtony.com. Use code Emily for 20% off. That's emilyandtony.com.
Perhaps play a little game called Just a Tip. Just for a second, just to see how it feels.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger, host of the Art of Charm podcast, the number one dating and relationship advice podcast in iTunes.
I'm Emily Morse, host of the Sex with Emily podcast, the number one sex and relationship podcast on iTunes, and it's sexwithemily.com. And this is Just the Tip.
So recently I've been reading about clitoral orgasms and vaginal orgasms and all these different types of orgasms. I guess, how many types are there? It seems like there's a ton.
Oh my God, there's so many different types. No, but the thing is, for each woman it's different. There's clitoral orgasms, there is G-spot orgasms, there's even blended orgasms. Mm-hmm. So most women...
It's like a smoothie.
Exactly, you just put it in a blender
and
see what happens.
An
orgasm smoothie sounds delicious. I'd like to wake up to that every single morning. So most women need clitoral stimulation, even before any other kind. So get her clitoris going, get it warmed up, but then she's more likely to achieve other orgasms after she's warmed up. So the G-spot orgasm, which can be achieved with your penis or with fingers. You can explore, use lots of lube. You can also, women can have orgasms through their breasts or their nipples alone. Did you
really
know that?
Just through the nipples?
Just the nipples.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy orgasms.
That's the safest sex ever.
That is the safest sex ever. And I think some women don't even know it, so spend some time on her nipples. You can also, there's also the blended or fused type of orgasm. This happens when more than one area of the body becomes stimulated and then aroused at the same time. So a lot of women experience a clitoral orgasm and a vaginal orgasm. That's also one of the most pleasurable twofers on the planet.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good combo deal.
Yep.
Awesome.
So play with your partner and figure out what she likes. And her body, you know, women, men look at the vagina as the Rubik's Cube of life, but you can get all the colors on one side.
If you guys want to learn more from the Art of Charm about dating, relationships, and even networking for business, visit us at theartofcharmpodcast.com or check us out in iTunes and follow me on Twitter at @theartofcharm.
And check out the Sex with Emily podcast at sexwithemily.com and on iTunes if you want to have the best sex of your life, that is. Also, follow me on Twitter at sexwithemily.
TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. Okay, in the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. So easy. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.